It's just past 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. Kat Brooks is on vacation this week. She'll be back on Monday. My name is Brian Edwards-Teeker. With me in KPFA studios, as he is most weeks at this time, although next week he himself will be on vacation.
Yes.
Mitch Jezerich.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, sir.
I'm cocked and ready.
Good to hear.
Yes. You understand the pun, don't you?
No.
That's what Donald Trump said.
Oh, really?
Instead of saying locked and ready, he said he was cocked and ready.
When did he say this?
Well, when he was talking about potentially striking Iran, that he was cocked and ready to do it. So I'm just saying, Brian, taking the lead from the top.
Yeah, let's start there.
I'm cocked and ready.
Apparently, Thursday, we nearly started a war and possibly did start a war. Reporting that came out Friday said the U.S. military had been ready to launch airstrikes on target in Iran. President Trump called it off at the last minute, according to that reporting. Now there's reporting out, I believe AP got the story last night, that the U.S. military did carry out cyber attacks on Iranian rocket and missile launching computer systems on Thursday. Presumably, it was intended to be coordinated with the airstrike. What's going on?
Well, at that level, I don't really know. I don't know who really knows at that level what's actually happening. I do find it, and you know, I don't even entirely trust the whole narrative. Not that I have different information that would suggest a different story. But sometimes I wonder this coming out and saying we were about to strike and I approved it and then I canceled it. I wonder if that's really true or if that's sending a message both to Iran as well as political leaders and parties and messaging here in the United States. So for me, it's really hard to understand exactly what's going on. A cyber attack is seen on the international scene as a step below military escalation, at least a direct, physical violent confrontation. Donald Trump was interviewed by Chuck Todd of NBC's Meet the Press, in which he said he's willing to talk to Iran without preconditions. Now, of course, the United States backed out of the agreement that had already been struck in 2015. The Trump administration wants an agreement, they say. They want it to be tougher than what Barack Obama struck. So this is all in the context of stepping out of that 2015 agreement. We'll see what happens. It is interesting to watch how the president operates with these kind of things. I think we've seen it with North Korea. I think in some ways we've also seen it with Venezuela, where he's very vocal, boisterous about using the military or potentially using the military. With Venezuela, is really John Bolton when, you saw 5,000 troops to Colombia on his pad. Mm-hmm. And then stepping away from that. And not pursuing those actions, at least not yet. Now, I don't know if there will be military escalation with Iran, if there will be a war with Iran. But we saw this with Syria, too. And with Donald Trump, he eventually did send some missiles into Syria against the regime of Bashar Assad. But it was a pretty minor strike, right? It does seem like the one thing about Trump is he is hesitant. And he is keeping in place many of the things that were happening before, like drone strikes from the Obama administration around the world. So it's not that those things aren't happening, but it does seem as though he is hesitant in escalating with the actual military and military strikes.
Yeah. I mean, and also the administration appears to be internally divided, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. Bolton, Pompeo, they're hawks, particularly on Iran. But there's
Trump even said so. Trump said Bolton would like to take on the entire world if he could.
There's something more troubling, kind of buried deeper in the reporting on this stuff. And go back to an article about the capacity for these cyber attacks that the New York Times ran on the 15th of June. And this was specifically about the U.S. Committing cyber infiltration and cyber attacks inside Russia. It referenced language that was buried pretty deep in last year's military authorization bill that says that, quote, routine conduct of clandestine military activity, end quote, in cyberspace, in order to, quote, deter, safeguard, or defend against malicious cyber activities against the United States, can be approved by the Defense Secretary. Defense Secretary. No presidential authorization required. And later in the article, the Times, citing two anonymous sources in the military, said they did not believe President Trump had been briefed on cyber attacks that had actually been carried out in Russia against targets like the power grid or power plants. Which fits the pattern of authorities of what would have happened Thursday, how the president would have been in a position to call off one attack, like the actual bombs, while a cyber attack, attacking the presumably air defenses of Iran went forward. And on the one hand, it's totally understandable that people in the military would want to keep this president in the dark, particularly about anything regarding Russia. On the other hand, what a terrifying precedent if, you know, the kind of institutional reconfiguration that happens under the Trump presidency is the slow erosion of civilian control over the military, which has been a hallmark of American democracy since its inception. You know, that the military starts slowly building these authorities to operate autonomously. And, you know, a cyber attack is an act of war. It can have casualties. It can certainly trigger retaliation and escalation. And that's typically the kind of decision you want left up to the person, like, who also has their finger on the diplomatic apparatus of the country, right? Who has a greater tool set than just launching attacks.
Yeah, I think that's also symbolic of our times and in many issues concerning the cyber world and what are the laws and what are the parameters and boundaries around what's permissible and what's not permissible, whether if we're talking about cyber attacks by the military or we're even talking about speech and platforms and all these things. Our laws have not caught up to a new world that we're operating in. So you're saying on one hand, the military can go ahead and institute a cyber attack against Russia without the president even knowing. We don't know if that was the situation with Iran, but perhaps. But the reporting was that was the situation with Russia. Well, you know who else didn't know was Congress, mm-hmm. right? Congress didn't know about it as well. So if you are, especially if you're doing it against Russia specifically, if you do a cyber attack on Russia, inside Russia, on its energy grid. I mean, that's pretty different than trying to oppose in a proxy war, say what's happening in Syria, right? So where does the cyber world lie in these kind of things? I guess the only other thing I would say about that, I haven't done a lot of thought about this, but it's not uncommon for the military. I mean, the military oftentimes does a military strike without presidential approval. You know, the president does not oversee every single military strike. But again, going back to Russia, that's interesting because it's not like we're at war with Russia. I mean, the relations are tense, but we're not war with Russia. And so to do a strike, a cyber attack on Russia without or any country, right, any sovereign state without presidential the president knowing could be concerning. But a lot of these things haven't been determined in the entire cyber world.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the most troubling piece of language in the defense authorization bill from last year is that the Secretary of Defense has the power to launch cyber attacks to deter, right? That's the language, to deter, right? For the sole purpose of sending a signal that, hey, if you mess with us, we can mess with you back. Can do signaling through an actual attack on the civilian infrastructure of another country, like their power grid. That, you know, power grid, people's lives depend on a power grid. Power goes out there.
I would be interested in knowing what are the international norms. Mm-hmm. How do other countries address this issue? Mm. And do they give, I mean, so the United States has taken an aggressive posture, not unheard of, right? Maybe it's leading in this area of doing that kind of thing. But it is one argument that cyber attacks and cyber defense, all these things happen so quickly and out of nowhere that you really don't have time to go through a whole chain of command. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the Geneva Conventions apply or the other laws of war, but sounds like a good segment.
Yeah.
As many of our conversations come up with.
But little answers.
Yeah.
little answers. But the defense authorization measure, I think, is worth diving into, Brian, because there is some movement there.
Right. Right. Speaking of which, I know we want to spend a bunch of our time on the just cluster mess at the border with detention centers for migrants and the raids that were called off this week. But the Saudi arms sales resolutions made their way through Congress last week or cleared the Senate. So now Congress is officially on record disapproving under the Arms Export Control Act of the 22 separate arms sales to Saudi Arabia that the Trump administration has initiated, claiming emergency powers, about $8 billion worth of weapon sales. I'm kind of curious. It's relatively new for Congress to be exercising these powers, certainly new for them to be exercising them so aggressively. Curious what you think of the votes and what happens next.
Well, it did pass the Senate. Mm-hmm. The House of Representatives will most likely take it up this week. Mm-hmm. And in the Senate, again, it's a Republican-controlled Senate that tried to block these $8 billion worth of arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Again, important to point out, previously, both the Senate and the House approved a resolution saying that they do not approve of the United States supporting Saudi Arabia in the war in Yemen. And so this dynamic is not entirely surprising. And then President Trump came out and used an emergency clause within that Arms Export Control Act that you mentioned that said in a state of an emergency, the president can go outside of Congress and make this sale, which is some people will even question the legality of that because all spending must originate from Congress. It's the first thing that you find in the Constitution. That's the power. Congress has the power of the purse, and in particular, the House of Representatives does, which had not approved this sale of weapons to Saudi Arabia. Nonetheless, the Trump administration did make a declaration of emergency in the sense of we're going to bypass Congress because they knew they couldn't get the support, right? So that's where we are now. The administration working unilaterally against the wishes probably of Congress in supporting Saudi Arabia. And the Trump administration is using the incidents with Iran as its justification to sell these weapons to Saudi Arabia. So it passes the Senate, not with the majority of Republican support, minority of Republican support, but enough with all Democratic support in order to get through the Senate. Now it'll go through the House of Representatives, where it'll most likely pass as well. But it'll be the same dynamic that we saw with the resolution against U.S. involvement in supporting Saudi Arabia in the war of Yemen. Donald Trump will be able to veto this measure, and it's very unlikely that Congress will have the needed votes to override that veto.
It is so weird that a check on presidential authority is subject to a presidential veto.
Yeah, and that brings us up to another issue that I think it is worth talking about because it deals with our own very local congressional member, Barbara Lee of Oakland and Berkeley. She got language in a defense budget bill last week approved that would sunset within about 8 or 9 months the authorization of use for military force, which is an authorization that basically the entire war on terrorism has been based on. This is the authorization was passed just days after the 9/11 attacks. This is when Barbara Lee was the one sole vote in Congress against it. Every war since, the United States presidents have used this authorization in not having to get any approval from Congress or to come to Congress later in military actions around the world. So this is something that Barbara Lee has been working on for a number of years, almost from the beginning. I remember covering this when I was in Congress, not as a representative, but as a journalist. And each, you know, with time, it gets a little bit further. So the previous Congress, the committee, a House committee approved the language. This time, it looks like the House of Representatives is going to approve the measure. Is this going to be something like we've seen with Yemen and also the Saudi arms deal, in which maybe if enough Republicans will peel off and vote for it in the Senate. I don't know the answer to that. I think of somebody like Lindsey Graham, who did vote, who's an ally of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. who did vote to support blocking the administration selling the arms to Saudi Arabia. Would he vote for this? I'm questionable, only because Lindsey Graham is overall a big supporter of the war on terrorism and giving the president the ability to go out and execute the war on terrorism. At the same time, and this is interesting about Democrats too, this defense budget bill is the biggest defense budget bill we've seen as of yet, well over $700 billion. Mm. So it is represents an increase in military spending. Again, this is from the Democratic controlled House of Representatives that has, you know, a few lines from Barbara Lee in there saying that, but the authorization of use of military force would expire. So does that big budget number, does that big spending number for the military mean that it would be difficult for Republicans to oppose it, considering it would be an increase in military spending? Furthermore, let's just say the Senate does approve it, or let's just say eventually Congress as a whole, if they come to a conference committee and allows that language to stay in the bill and it goes to the president's desk. The president can veto it, but would he be willing, because presidents rarely would accept anything that would rein in their own power, and this is what that would do.
Right.
But it's also hard to veto a military bill if you're Donald Trump that has so much money in it and increases in military spending. So that's sort of the dynamic that will probably unfold there. I think he probably does veto it. I doubt that it actually gets to the president's desk, but it's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's also possible he signs it and in a signing statement says, I don't agree with this part and I'm not going to follow it. Or doesn't even bother with the signing statement, but, you know, continues to use military authority like nothing changed.
Yeah, but then you at least now you can use that authority to justify what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If that's no longer there, I do think that there is a growing sense in Congress that presidential powers become too great. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because Donald Trump, it didn't begin with Donald Trump in any measure. This is a making over the last 70 years or so. But it does seem that every year there is this growing realization that Congress has really given up quite a bit of its power, and that the president has filled that vacuum. So if you take that legal authorization away, it does open the doors for Congress to respond in other ways towards the president.
Yeah, no, it could be a basis of impeachment if the president charged ahead anyway. I'm just saying, like, that's already on the table. Doesn't seem to be slowing him down that much. Immigration. Where do you want to start?
Well, again, Donald Trump had threatened last week that ICE would begin deporting people internally. This isn't at the border. Millions of people. Then it was leaked later in the week that there would be an operation in 10 cities, and the cities were named. San Francisco is one of those cities in which that ICE raids would occur, that it would attempt to obtain 2,000 people. So not quite the millions that Donald Trump said earlier in the week, but maybe Donald Trump was talking in the long term, who knows. But then Donald Trump canceled that operation. And there are really three reasons why, and they may all be true or maybe some combination of them. The first one being that Donald Trump said he did it at the request of Democrats. And it is true that Nancy Pelosi called Donald Trump Friday night asking him to cancel the raids. But what he said instead is that I will postpone them really for 2 weeks. And in that 2 weeks, if Congress doesn't move to reform and change asylum laws, then I'm going to go through with this. And what are we talking about there? One of the things that Trump administration is talking about is they've always been they've always wanted to change the laws concerning that if you are seeking asylum and you do everything by the books, the United States government's supposed to take you and continue the process. I think they want that's what they want to change. They want to be able to not accept people if they go by the books and do what they're supposed to do when they come to the border. Will that happen in Congress? I doubt it. I very much doubt that would happen. So that's Donald Trump's reason why they did not go through with these ICE raids. Another reason why they may not have gone through these ICE raids is right now Congress is considering, and this week very well may vote, on a $4.5 billion spending bill that is being dubbed a humanitarian spending bill to try to alleviate conditions in the where people are being detained now. We've seen many stories about how, you know, many people have died while they've been detained. People don't have blankets, toothbrushes, all these type of things. And so this is money that's supposed to alleviate that. So it is said, and it has the support of Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives. That said, the Hispanic caucus in the House of Representatives, or in Congress and all together, has trepidations over this bill because they say that they're worried that the Trump administration will end up using that money not for humanitarian relief efforts, but use it for punitive and enforcement measures. And so they're kind of on the fence. And I think there was a concern, and maybe what Nancy Pelosi told Donald Trump that night when she called him was like, if this gets out in the news and we see all these raids happening and there's a big protest, and it just turns ugly, that might turn Congress against you. It might upset our path towards trying to get this money passed. So that's another possibility. And then the third possibility, I think this is very true, the fact that some of the details were released about the raid, saying including what cities these mm-hmm. were going to happen in. And of course, this allows people to mobilize. This allows people to get ready. ICE, clearly, and the people who actually work at ICE are not very happy about this, right? You don't want everyone on alert and be able to protest or try to impede what could happen. So I think the fact that that some of these details leaked out was a third reason why these raids did not occur. And of course, part of the reason why they leaked out, Trump started the process by the week earlier. He didn't give the details. He didn't say what cities.
But he did say millions.
I mean, you know, so you might be able to start at the very top.
Mitch Jezerich, always good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Mitch Jezerich hosts Letters in Politics. You can catch him Monday through Thursdays at 10 a.m. here on KPFA. Former Washington correspondent for the network that this radio station is a part of. This show is Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards Tiekert. The Supreme Court has not issued decisions in any of the cases that we've been watching for yet this morning. They are still issuing decisions from the bench. So when we come back after news headlines, we're going to air a conversation we had with Josh Levine, editorial director of Slate, about his new book on the myth of the welfare queen and the real life person behind the myth as crafted by Ronald Reagan. That's coming up next after the news.